Developers want to run a carbon dioxide pipeline through central Illinois. Advocates tout carbon capture as a climate solution.
We continue to have really successful conversations.
Opponents call it dangerous.
Landowners don't want this.
That story next on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon. I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, you'll meet the candidates for Heartland Community College Board and a snapshot of early voting in McLean County.
The volume actually has surprised me a little bit.
Plus, a breakdown of the courtroom testimony that pulled back the curtain on how Illinois' former House Speaker operated in Springfield.
Tell Emily that this goes on the magic list.
And what is the magic list, and what does it say about Illinois politics? Those stories follow a Bloomington Normal News update, which is just ahead. This is WGLT Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story continues with local patient Ryan Fuller and his mother, Stephanie.
I believe it's made a big impact. I believe that if you have hearing loss, you should get it checked, you know? It's just been so helpful, and I don't know what I'd do without it.
Ryan and Stephanie's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. A company's plan to store liquefied carbon dioxide in underground storage sites may involve a larger geographical swath of central Illinois than previously thought, including McLean County. Tim Shelley from sister station WCBU reports.
Navigator CO2's Heartland Greenway carbon capture pipeline would transport carbon dioxide from ethanol and fertilizer plants in South Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois to sequestration sites in Christian and Montgomery counties. Those plans have led to a lot of outcry from the people whose lands the pipeline would run near or under. They say the pipeline could have a negative impact on agricultural land usage, and they're also concerned about the dangers of a CO2 pipeline rupture. But the company is having conversations about sequestration with landowners in Tazewell, McLean, and Logan counties, among other central Illinois counties. That's according to a company spokesperson. It's unclear what specific routes the pipeline could potentially take through these areas. In a nutshell, sequestration is the long-term storage of carbon dioxide in underground rock layers as a way to cut down on carbon emissions. Carbon dioxide captured from major emission sources is captured, compressed, and transported through high-pressure pipelines to a sequestration site. Injection wells then submerge the liquefied CO2 into the rock deep underground. The liquefied carbon dioxide fills the porous rock layers, trapping it. Illinois is particularly well-suited to geologic CO2 sequestration because the Mount Simon sandstone targeted for the carbon storage is more than a mile underground. That's well away from aquifers and fossil fuels, according to a study by the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. The study also said that the Eau Claire shale that lies atop the Mount Simon sandstone is impermeable. That prevents upward CO2 movement. Navigator CO2 pulled its initial application with the Illinois Commerce Commission, but refiled a revised application last month. But why are conversations happening here outside that proposed route? Simply put, because such a wide swath of central Illinois has the ideal underground geology for sequestration. That's according to Elizabeth Burns Thompson. She's the Vice President of Public Affairs for the Navigator CO2 project.
We continue to have really successful conversations, both in the areas that we initially identified and have built out and begun the permits on sequestration wells, but also expanded areas.
Burns Thompson acknowledges that not every landowner may sign an easement allowing the pipeline to run through their property. She says building relationships is key in this process, and the company considers exercising eminent domain a last resort.
Eminent domain is not a trump card that we carry in our back pocket. And when you break it down to its fundamental operations, it doesn't save us time, it doesn't save us money, and it doesn't make us any friends.
She says the company already has another phase envisioned as additional ethanol plants sign contracts to participate in an expanded build-out of the Heartland Greenway pipeline that would include sequestration sites at multiple places throughout central Illinois. The pipeline isn't just carbon capture and storage, however. Burns Thompson calls it a dynamic project that would have numerous on-ramps and off-ramps, allowing it to also supply carbon for products like food, beverages, and dry ice. But Pam Richard, the lead organizer for the Coalition to Stop CO2 Pipelines, says there's a number of reasons why the Heartland Greenway pipeline is generating backlash.
Landowners don't want this. And you know that, right? Because, I mean, if you're along the pipeline route, that's a safety concern and a risk that people are not willing to take.
Richard is alluding to the February 2020 pipeline rupture in rural Mississippi that led to evacuations and hospitalizations. High concentrations of carbon dioxide in the air can cause asphyxiation. Richard says there's also property concerns to consider, like the pipeline's impact on the agricultural land. Navigator CO2 pulled its first application after they failed to secure enough landowners to support it. Filing a new permit application allows the company to begin engaging with landowners again. Richard says carbon capture and storage in general is a distraction from green solutions that she says would do more to help the environment.
What it's doing is diverting all of our resources from things we know that work. And I'm talking about both the renewables and energy, efficiency, conservation, and land use changes.
Currently, the only approved carbon capture and storage project online in Illinois is at an ADM demonstration project facility in Macon County, near Decatur. Richard says while it appears carbon has been successfully sequestered at the site for the past 11 years, the Heartland Greenway proposal is a much larger commercial-scale project. She's skeptical carbon can be stored underground on a permanent basis on this larger scale. She also claims pipelines running through Tazewell, Logan, and McLean counties are particularly concerning because the Mahomet Aquifer, a major drinking water source, runs through it. The sequestrated carbon would be stored deeper underground below aquifers, under a layer of shale. Navigator CO2 anticipates having all federal and state permitting wrapped up by the end of this year, with construction beginning in 2024 and initial commissioning starting by early to mid-2025. Legislation backed by Illinois opponents of carbon capture pipelines would create a moratorium on new developments for 2 years, or until revised federal safety standards are taken up. Another bill would ban the usage of eminent domain for carbon capture pipelines and introduce other state-level regulations. The federal government appears to be banking on carbon sequestration as at least one potential solution to the climate crisis. The Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 incentivized the practice through changes to tax credits that offer direct payments to project developers and carbon emitters. It increased the value of those credits from $50 to $85 per metric ton for carbon captured from industrial sites and power plants that are stored in geological formations like the Mount Simon Sandstone under central Illinois. The revised plans for the Heartland Greenway pipeline would move up to 10 million metric tons of carbon every year. But Richard says she believes carbon capture and storage is just a distraction.
This is just something that, in my view, is allowing corporate interest to make a lot of money from dollars made available by the federal government, and we're headed in the wrong direction with that.
But Burns Thompson casts the pipeline as not only an economic opportunity, but also an opportunity to cut down on carbon emissions going out into the atmosphere.
Central Illinois really is well suited to provide, a necessary resource to help support, the development of carbon-based manufacturing and the evolution of carbon-based, efficiency practices, not only just for processors there in the state or within the region, but really throughout the greater Midwest holistically.
The study conducted by the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute says while carbon capture and storage could play a critical role in combating climate change, It will also require robust government oversight and deep public support to produce the desired outcomes. I'm Tim Shelley.
Coming up tomorrow on Sound Ideas, people living in tents outside a Bloomington homeless shelter have been ordered to leave. They can't get into the shelter and they're not sure where to go next. This is Sound Ideas, WGLT's news magazine. I'm John Norton. The three candidates running for Heartland Community College's board say they don't have any real issues with how the college is run. They say the only problem is not enough people know about all the classes and training programs they offer. Here's WGLT's Eric Stock.
The Heartland Community College Board of Trustees has two open seats on the ballot for the April 4th election and two incumbents. The terms are for 6 years. Former Illinois State University professor Mary Campbell is seeking a second term. Former Heartland staff member Cecilia Long has served on the community college's board since she was elected 2 years ago to fill a board vacancy after Greg Chadwick died. The third candidate is Dave Selzer. He's retired after several jobs in the nonprofit sector. He also served two stints on the McLean County Board as a Republican. Even though he's challenging two incumbents, Selzer says he's not running against anyone else or against the school. He believes the college is doing well. Selzer says he's running because he sees the value of service, especially in education.
As I was looking for what I'd like to do at this next juncture in my life, education's important to me. So I thought Heartland's a great asset we have, and that's where I'm looking to get involved in.
Mary Campbell spent her career in education. She was a professor in social work for ISU for 30 years. She was first elected to the Heartland Board in 2017. In 2019, Campbell opened a free job training site for women in West Bloomington called Dreams Are Possible. The goal was to prepare women to land an apprenticeship in the building trade.
Women tend to, without much education, they tend to defer to men in conversations and in training. So we try to have it just for women. They learn about skills. They learn about using tools.
Campbell says the women also learned about job training programs offered at Heartland. That's one area where Heartland Community College has grown in recent years and has helped combat the drops in enrollment many two-year schools have encountered. Mary Campbell notes the average Heartland student is 23 years old. Campbell says she wants to see Heartland do more to recruit non-traditional college students.
We really, as a community, need those individuals who can make a living wage, do an important job, and can benefit themselves and their families, as well as the community at large.
Campbell says she also wants to see the college do more outreach to women and people of color. Cecilia Long started at Heartland as an intern, then worked at the college full time, helping students with issues like housing, child care, transportation, and mental health. Long now does social work for Prairie State Legal Services, a firm that's helping people who are facing eviction. Long says she believes her time as an employee at Heartland gives her a unique perspective as a board member. She says she considers herself a voice for the faculty and staff who work at Heartland. The college has nearly 700 full and part-time employees and instructors.
I was kind of thinking about just how some of our voices, the staff people that I worked with, didn't feel like they were always heard by upper leadership. And I think that's across the board for most organizations.
Long says she wants to see better pay for Heartland staff, and she'd like to see part-time and temporary positions that involve direct service to students be made permanent. Long says Heartland staff has done more community outreach, such as parades and neighborhood block parties, and that's helped the college increase its minority student population to 30%. She wants to see the college do more of that to attract students in underserved areas.
I would say I'm really passionate about accessibility for education and for students like myself, being a first-generation student. I know how important it is to have those opportunities and resources available to you.
Mary Campbell says a key form of community outreach for Heartland has been taking some of its job training to the Western Avenue Community Center in West Bloomington.
Just like ISU, even Heartland is a scary place for people who maybe aren't familiar with the school system, had a difficult time when they were in school. And so if you take the program out to them, and they get comfortable with it, then you take them onto campus as a tour. You bring people from campus out to them.
Dave Selzer says he appreciates the creative thinking behind dual credit courses that Heartland students can take while still in high school. He says the job training also makes the college a good community partner because it's helping to fill manufacturing jobs locally that are in high demand.
When I was on the county board, we made promises to Rivian, to Brandt, to other businesses about our workforce, and Heartland's a key part of us having workers for those businesses that we attract to our community.
Selzer says Heartland's continuing education courses are also a hidden gem. Selzer says more robust marketing would hopefully bring in more students and keep the tax rate as low as possible.
People's burden at all levels of taxation is just getting a little out of control. And I just mean that from sales tax to property tax. It's not a partisan feeling. It's just one that we need to make sure to show people's return on what they're giving us.
Selzer says one way the college can keep the costs down is through scholarships. He's helped raise money for student scholarships in the past. Heartland has maintained a level property tax rate for years. The college recently approved an $8 per credit hour tuition increase. Mary Campbell says the college remains on good financial footing, and she credits the college's foundation and its grant writers for securing money for student scholarships. Heartland has about $21 million in reserves, according to staff. That's enough to cover about 7 months of expenses. The Heartland Board in 2020 set a new policy for how much the college should keep in reserves. That $21 million is almost as high as its reserves can go in comparison to the overall budget. Cecilia Long says the college's savings helped it weather the COVID pandemic without layoffs, but she says she doesn't want that piggy bank to get too big if workers could be paid more.
So I think that's going to be an ongoing conversation. I don't think that our savings should ever come at the cost of providing adequate pay for our employees.
For now, Long says the college has found the right balance. I'm Eric Stock.
Sound Ideas is WGLT's news magazine. Thank you for listening. The election is April 4th. That's 1 week away. Early voting is underway. Bloomington and Normal voters will choose city council and school board members and decide on the Unit 5 referendum. WGLT's Ryan Denham reports election officials are somewhat pleased by the turnout so far.
These spring elections without a mayor's race on the ballot tend to draw pretty low turnout. Last time this happened 4 years ago, just 12% of registered voters turned out. There are some early signs turnout this time will be higher. More than 6,000 voters in McLean County have already cast ballots. About a quarter of those have been early voters. The rest are vote by mail. Bloomington Election Commission Executive Director Luke Stremlaw says that's higher than expected.
The volume actually has surprised me a little bit. I didn't think that we would have such a volume with this quote-unquote smaller election.
Stremlaw's office handles voting for anyone living in Bloomington. County Clerk Kathy Michael handles voting for everybody else in the county, including Normal residents. Michael says school board races and the Unit 5 tax referendum could lead to higher turnout.
In one area 2 years ago, we had like a 2 to 5% turnout, maybe 20 voters. But this year's different. There's even contested races out in the rural areas. And of course, here in Normal, I think we're going to see a busy election.
Early voting is available every day through next Monday, including over the weekend. You can vote early at the Government Center downtown, or if you live in Bloomington, next door at the Bloomington Election Commission office. I'm Ryan Denham.
WGLT has coverage of all the Bloomington Normal races on the Election 2023 page at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm John Norton. Jurors in a federal bribery trial have heard lots of testimony about how former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan's operation worked in Springfield. Four former ComEd executives and lobbyists are on trial for allegedly bribing Madigan to advance legislation that steered hundreds of millions more profit to the power company. Melba Laura from Chicago Public Media spoke to reporter Dave McKinney about what happened in the Chicago courtroom this week.
So much of this trial has been about Madigan, even though he's not the one on trial here. His trial is scheduled for next year. What stood out to you from the trial about how Madigan worked in Springfield?
You know, Melba, I've covered Madigan since the mid-1990s, and I'm learning new things about how he wielded power and rewarded his friends. I mean, it was all stuff that was never in plain view the way it's been in this trial. One witness talked about how Madigan governed through fear and intimidation. We're also seeing how a certain lobbyist, ComEd's one-time hired gun and defendant Michael McLean, had the speaker's ear like no one else. One witness described McLean as a double agent because it was never clear whether he was representing the interests of his clients or of the speaker.
And Dave, there was mention in the trial of a magic list. Tell us about what the magic list is.
The magic list, that's a nickname or a code name. It was something that McLean used to refer to a list of favored lobbyists in Madigan's world. To get on that list, lobbyists had to be loyal to Madigan. They once worked for him, they did favors for him, they sent him campaign money. And in turn, those magic list lobbyists got more clients, big clients. We got a glimpse of this list when prosecutors played a secretly recorded phone call between McLean and Madigan fundraiser Victor Reyes. Reyes is preparing to drop off a big bundle of campaign cash for the former speaker, and it's clear Reyes is on the list.
Tell Emily that this goes on the magic list.
I got it.
Now, we first reported on this magic list in 2019, but we learned this week that McLean himself kept it on a piece of hotel stationery.
And I saw that prosecutors even called one of Madigan's top aides to the stand. What insights did he provide?
Well, you're referring to Will Cugino. He was once one of Madigan's senior most aides, but later became a lobbyist. He was testifying under a guarantee of immunity from prosecutors. Cugino said McLean was a mentor to him. And on this tape we're about to hear, we heard McLean almost giving Cugino paternal advice on the stresses of his new career as a lobbyist.
As long as we always remember who our real client is.
Yep.
It's not easy, but it mollifies it.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to keep your priorities straight if you remember that.
Yep.
That main client, of course, was Madigan. Cugino outlined how McLean was on phone calls and email chains inside the speaker's office, strategizing about pending ComEd legislation as if he were a staff member. No other lobbyist had that kind of access, and it was extremely valuable to ComEd.
There was also testimony from ComEd's former top lawyer about pressure that he felt from defendants about rewarding Madigan's political allies. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. Prosecutors had attorney Thomas O'Neill on the stand. He testified about how McLean and this other former ComEd lobbyist on trial, John Hooker, pressured him to find legal work for Reyes, that magic list guy that we talked about, even though there wasn't enough work to do, and how Madigan pushed for a political friend for ComEd's board of directors. O'Neill recalled former ComEd CEO Anne Promajori, another defendant in this trial, wading into all of this with one emphasis. What's important to the speaker is important to ComEd.
That was state politics reporter Dave McKinney and Mel Ballora from Chicago Public Media. And that's Sound Ideas today. WGLT's news magazine is made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton. Some story help today came from WGLT's Eric Stock and Ryan Denham. We also heard from WCBU's Tim Shelley and Chicago Public Radio's Mel Ballora and Dave McKinney. The show was produced once again by Samantha Hill. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.